Brilliant. Okay, I think we will get started. Good morning, everybody. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Peter. I'm a partner with MPM Legal. We're a specialist business and immigration law practice based in the south of England. We work with clients that are all over the world but have a common interest, which is employing people here in the UK. I'm delighted to be joined this morning by my wonderful colleague, Adrienne. Morning, Adrienne.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, morning, everybody.
I think we were just saying we're a little bit rusty, I think, on this because it's our first webinar for quite a few weeks now, isn't it?
Months.
Months, probably. Yeah, a good couple of months. But for those of you that joined us last year for our Employment 101 series, they were really well received. We really enjoyed doing them. So we're back for season two. We're going to be with you into the new year, looking at all sorts of different topics relating to the world of work. Now, those of you who are familiar with our webinars will know that we do record them, so you're able to share them later with any colleagues who might be interested in what we're talking about today. Please do you encourage your colleagues to sign up as well and join us on the future editions. We absolutely love it when you ask us questions as well, so we don't just want to talk at you for the next half an hour or so, although we are perfectly capable of doing that. There's a chat function at the bottom if you want to put any comments down, but actually for questions, please try and use the Q&A function at the bottom as well. We'll either answer them as we go along. We might save them up for the end. We'll kind of do what we feel like, I think, really, but we're pretty relaxed about this stuff. So if you've got any burning questions, please do shout out and we'll answer them. We're not going to open up your microphone, get you to speak or anything like that. So don't worry about being put on the spot, and we probably won't even identify who you are either. So what are we talking about in this series? Well, we're looking at the future of work. It feels like quite a significant period of change at the moment. We're kind of grappling with coming out of the pandemic, the effects that that's had on the workplace, and then everything that's going on in the economy that's affecting our employees as well. Not to mention the specter of quite significant legislative change, certainly in respect of a lot of the EU mandated laws that we deal with. They could be disappearing depending on which newspapers you read. So there could be quite a few impacts directly coming down the line quite quickly. And they're the sort of things that we want to explore in the coming weeks. So if you've got an interest in that, then please do join us. Obviously, the unexpected arrival of COVID-19 did present this sudden opportunity to fundamentally change both how we work and where we work. And almost overnight, businesses had to pivot to different ways of working. Now, some of those businesses were already geared up in terms of both the technology to enable remote working and the systems in place to enable effective employee management as well. And that effective management is one of the themes that we're going to be looking at in the coming weeks also. However, it's fair to say that many businesses weren't geared up. And as we transition out of this shadow of the pandemic, those of us that work in employment law and HR are still grappling with some of the challenges that different ways of working suddenly present. And we're talking here about things like how much can we trust our employees? And I think actually trust is a massive, massive theme or issue to kind of get your arms around when we're looking at different ways of working. How can we bring people back to an office environment? Be it on a full-time basis, on a part-time basis, but how do we shift the mindset from always working remotely to maybe partially returning to an office? How do we operate entirely remotely? Obviously, the polar opposite situation where I know of businesses that have closed down their physical space in terms of office or workplaces, and they've transitioned to either a fully remote workforce or they perhaps use shared offices as a hot desk one day a week or once a month just to check into people. How are we ensuring consistency of performance amongst our teams? How are we attracting, nurturing, and retaining new talent within the workplace as well? And something that we're looking at today, how do we keep our employees safe? Now, in particular today, we wanted to pick up on this theme of employee safety, working, and the right to disconnect as well, because there have been some developments there. And I found a fascinating article, which is on the Cambridge Judge Business School website. And this article discusses a study that was funded by Vitality. It was done in 2021. And the findings of the survey of the study are actually that remote working has been a real mixed bag for employees in terms of both employee well-being and productivity. And if employee well-being is an issue and employee productivity is an issue, then they're two things that you really want to get your arms around. Now, the key findings from the study were that employees were working longer. So they had what they referred to as a higher work week span. So the amount of time that they're spending working is a lot longer when they're remote working. And I mean, certainly I can identify with that from the times that I've worked remotely. I don't know about you, Adrian, but
100%.
Well, I probably do know about you because we've talked about it. But during the pandemic, work was very busy, I think, for any employment lawyer and any HR professional. But it felt like I was working a heck of a lot of the time. And I don't know if anybody joining us today also experienced that as well.
I think that's one of the issues, isn't it? I mean, when you're working from home, that you don't have that. I mean, much as sort of traveling to work can be a pain in the neck, certainly traveling in the morning and traveling home at night is like you can gear up in the morning to your working week. And on the way home, that's the point when you can decompress. Whereas, you know, when you wander downstairs in your pajamas going, I'll put the kettle on and I'll switch my emails on and just have a look. I mean, I don't know about you, Peter, but sometimes I found myself going, I'll just look at this email and get to about 11 o'clock in the morning and I haven't yet had that cup of tea or I haven't yet had my breakfast because you're plunged headlong into it and you're still sitting in your pajamas, unless of course you've got a Zoom call, in which case pajamas are on the bottom and something nice is on the top.
It's pajama season. I'm definitely not a morning person. Anyone that knows me will know that I struggle in the morning. So for me, the day was stretched at the other end. You know, right. It was a case of getting the kids to bed, you know, doing the parenting routine, and then thinking, well, my laptop's there, I know I've got loads of work to do on furlough or whatever scheme the government had baked up that previous Friday. And it was just too easy to turn the computer back on and sit and work for another 2 or 3 hours and then just rinse and repeat that cycle. So, you know, I very much look forward to getting back into the office where I could have that separation of home time and work time, and knowing that if I wanted to, when I leave the office, I leave work behind. Yeah, and so just coming back to some of the findings from this study then, we're looking at longer working hours, we're looking at more time spent in low quality meetings. And again, you know, I hear a lot just from friends really who talk about the amount of time they spent online during COVID in meetings where they would be in 2 or 3 hour meetings and not really contributing very much. The meetings were low quality because there was either limited or no contribution required, or there was overlapping roles attending as well. So it's just a very inefficient way of working. And the last finding was that employees had higher levels of multitasking. And again, this is something that I can identify with as well. Sometimes it's trying to juggle kind of 7 or 8 different tasks at the same time and being guilty of not being 100% focused sometimes on just one thing where I could be a lot more efficient. Now, the reason why this is relevant is all of these things were associated in the study with worse work outcomes. And fundamentally, we're talking here about a decline in the work-life balance and a decline in the quality of work that's been produced as well. So again, two very significant things. More after-hours work predominantly affects one's sense of work engagement, but doesn't have a real impact on productivity or quality. And the increase in focused hours, and by focused hours, I'm talking here about blocks of 2 hours of work time with no interruptions at all, that affects work outcomes, but not work engagement. So clearly there are some downsides here associated with remote working. In the office environment, of course, it's a lot easier for us to have a sense of what our colleagues are doing, what they're working on, how focused they are, whether or not they're overworking. I mean, it doesn't feel that long ago that we were talking a lot about presenteeism and, you know, people just sitting in their chair at work and not really being efficient. And I think one of the things now is that presenteeism can still very much be an issue, but instead of the chair being in the office with everybody else, it's a chair in a study at home or at the dining table or propped up on the kitchen side.
Yeah.
So, Adrian, I think you're going to talk to us a bit more about why all of this is relevant in the work context for us employment lawyers.
Yeah, I mean, it's the presenteeism is really interesting because, as you say, when you're physically in the office, you can spot people who might still be there at like 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, or whatever in the evening, and you can kind of go, what are they still doing here? Are they working efficiently? Are they overworked? Is there something that needs to be done on it? But I think it's also important to remember that we're coming back round to wherever your employees are working from. As an employer, you've still got that duty of care to look after the health and safety of your employees. And this is really where this comes in. And I don't know about anyone else, but one of the biggest increases in our workload has arisen from all the mental health issues that are very much at the forefront of the press. So, you know, and whether that's sort of pandemic related or whether it's workload related or, you know, perhaps something coming down the line where you're reducing your workforce, but the workload might still be the same and people will end up overworked, then the mental health issues are being raised left, right and centre. And of course, there's then the potential that the knock-on effect is then that they are disabled. And, you know, you're then into the area of looking at reasonable adjustments and just treading carefully in terms of how you treat people for fear of any discrimination claims. So I think, you know, it's really important to remember that just because they're out of sight and they're working remotely doesn't mean that your duty is watered down in any way, you know, wherever they're working from. So, you know, and I think as some of the things that have changed massively, and it reminded me this week, is we got an email from our office manager saying, hey, we need to come around and check all your plugs and check your PAT testing. I mean, you know, that's something that was really important as part of the sort of the makeup of the business. And now, of course, with people working at home, it's like, God, what is that again? I can't even remember. But there are, you know, there are other things that you've got to remember. I mean, look, there are some practical things that you can obviously do, and you hopefully you're already doing to managing the risks. And, you know, and I think this is where there's actually quite a burden on HR and also on managers, as if managers will not say that they've got enough to do already with their sort of their core duties. But talking openly in regular meetings with the employees about workload, about the possibility, and in sort of encouraging employees to speak up if they're feeling stressed or they're, you know, mentally unwell or sort of challenged in that area is really important, because spotting it early is going to mean that it's much easier to handle at that stage rather than waiting until an employee goes off sick. Because the knock-on effect, obviously, of one person in the team going off sick is that other people then have to pick up their workload. And you've then got into a potential domino effect where you end up with a large part of your workforce being affected. So things like stress risk assessments. I mean, if people are home working, then there's a home working risk assessment that can be completed. But encouraging people to take their breaks, keeping an eye on things like annual leave records. Are they taking enough annual leave? Because taking holiday is part and parcel of health and safety legislation. So if they're not taking those regular breaks, check in with them and find out why not. Making those reminders is really important. You know, is there any sort of like occupational support available to them? Do you have an EAP available that they can use if they need? And, you know, if they are working remotely, think about the individual needs. And this is massive, isn't it, Peter? So you've got people that might be managing their workload around picking the kids up or, you know, caring for unwell relatives or all the rest of it. But from those juniors. And these are the people actually that I feel most sorry for when it comes to remote working. And, you know, for example, I know several people of my daughter's age who've started jobs, first job out of university, they're working fully remotely, their first job in industry. And, you know, that can be quite stressful because they've got to learn about the company, they've got to learn about their job. And whereas before they used to sit, you know, cheek by jowl with people who were more experienced than them, by them, and they could just pop their head up and go, how do I access that file? How do I do this? Where do I find a pen? You know, just basic stuff like that. All of a sudden, they are potentially isolated by working from home. And that in itself can be inherently stressful. And
that's I think that's one of the real things that professional firms are grappling with at the moment. It's, you know, when I think back to how I learned as a junior lawyer, I was sat in an office next to a partner. I was listening to how that person conducted themselves on the telephone. I was there on hand. So it was always, oh, can you help me out looking at this particular issue? Or I've just had this call looking at this particular case, or I've got to go up to the tribunal now. Do you want to come with me? You know, all that kind of soft skill work that is very difficult to replicate when you're doing something by video or remotely. And I think this is where maybe there's going to be like a difference between seniorities or generations in terms of how you're managing remote working with people. But yeah, I mean, fundamentally here, we're talking about the health and safety risk. It's kind of easy to forget that when we're talking about working time directives and hours of work, all that legislation and holidays and annual leave, it's all driven by health and safety, actually. That's what underpins it. It's about giving people adequate rest periods and proper rest breaks. And if you don't have the effective systems in place to monitor that remotely, you're setting yourselves up. I mean, worst case scenario is a legal claim. And, you know, we'd like to think that the chances of that could be relatively low, but you're setting yourselves up for low productivity, employees who are disengaged, you finding it harder to attract the right sort of talent as well, or worse, you know, losing people that you've invested time and money in recruiting.
Absolutely. So I think it's all about that regular contact. I think, you know, it's, you know, we talk about managers having one-to-one meetings, and, you know, I think the focus in those one-to-one meetings is very much on performance and, you know, what tasks have you got? How are you going to meet those deadlines? You know, quick, get it done, make sure everything's okay. But I think a large part of remote working is also just being able to encourage that open dialogue with the staff. You know, how are you managing? Have you got everything you need at home? Is there anything you're struggling with? And setting that tone where people can feel that they can stick their hand up and go, do you know what, I'm struggling a little bit. You know, sometimes when I need some help or I need to bounce an idea off somebody, I don't know where to turn. Who do I ring? Who do I get in touch with? I mean, again, speaking personally, again, during the pandemic, when these new schemes were brought out, you know, we were flat out busy. And sometimes I'd have a query and I'd just want to bounce an idea off somebody, as you do in a team where, again, you poke your head up above your desk and go, what about this? What do you think about this? Anyone done anything like that? And it was more difficult because you physically had to pick up the phone and get in contact with a colleague. And of course, if they're on the phone, you can't get hold of them. So that then leads into that sense of isolation. And whether they're junior, senior or anything, I think that collaboration remotely is really difficult to replicate. So it is, the message has got to be, speak up if you're stuck. Asking a, you know, what you might think is a silly question is not a silly question. And it's just encouraging that open dialogue so people don't then roll in on themselves and end up feeling isolated, which then leads to that stress.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And what about work-life balance, which I think...
What's that then?
Again, it's a... It's another theme that's kind of reared its head. And I mean, also speaking from personal experience, again, I think the struggle I had with permanently working from home was the lines between home life and work life were just very easily blurred.
Yeah.
Whereas when I'm in an office, like I am today, I know that when I leave the office, I can leave work behind unless I, you know, actively choose to go and there's something that I need to do in the evening, then I've got the ability to do that. But I have that control, whereas I think mandated permanent home working took away that control a little bit. But I guess then you're into personality types and the personalities of your employees and why one size doesn't fit all necessarily.
But I think things that you can do on that, I mean, and, you know, from a manager's point of view, managers see emails coming out at silly o'clock, whether that's early mornings or after hours. If that starts to be a regular pattern, then that for me would prompt a conversation. Is like, you know, I saw you sent that email at 10:30 last night. Everything okay? You're managing okay? Why are you working that late? They might turn around and go, yeah, no, look, really sorry. Had to pick the kids up, then take them to judo, come back, cook dinner. So there was a big chunk of time. So I was just catching up. And then the manager will go, okay, you're comfortable with that? Everything okay? Or it could be, I've got too much to do. And, you know, I had to work late because I was under pressure to get this done. And that then should be a conversation. So that's sort of looking out for the emails coming out at that time of night. Of course, then there's the reverse as well. And it's then looking at what time leaders or managers are actually sending out emails, because I know I've certainly had conversations with clients who felt that their staff have complained about being under pressure because they'll get an email sent out to them at 11 o'clock at night by somebody. and it's and they feel almost duty bound to respond to it immediately. So, you know, when we've got emails on our phones, and let's face it, a lot of us lie in bed at night playing on our phones, looking at the news or whatever, and if an email pops up, it can be really stressful if you think that you have to answer that email. So, you know, do you set a culture at your firm where you just say, do not feel that you have to respond to these emails outside of working hours, unless, you know, unless something really awful has hit the fan, then, you know, it's setting up those expectations. But it's definitely something to watch out for, because that in itself can be stressful, and it builds up over time. Mm-hmm. It's not something that is just a quick switch. It's a constant build, layer upon layer upon layer, until something breaks. And the idea of this is to try and head it off before it breaks.
Yeah, avoid that, because I think, you know, touching on what you said earlier, I mean, I'm dealing with at least four different situations for different clients at the moment, where they have predominantly remote workers who are very stressed. And part of the root cause of stress, they are attributing to work-related stress as well. And that reminds me, I mean, there was the Health and Safety Executive's own statistics that were published last December, identified that in 2021, there were 451,000 reported cases of employees being signed off with stress, and where that stress was attributed to work. Now, of course, it isn't always the case. Employees will say that sometimes, and, you know, it can be multifaceted, the cause for it. But, you know, if an employee is coming to you and saying, I'm off work at the moment, I'm unwell, and actually it's work-related stress, they're not using the words, you've caused this, but obviously that's the unsaid, and that's the risk area from you. I mean, quite apart from it being the right thing to do in terms of how you treat people, the expectations that you want to create, you also, as a consequence of that, don't want to be facing legal exposure for certain types of tribunal claims or civil claims where people have been made unwell. Now, this theme about emails does transition me very nicely, thank you, Adrienne, onto the right to disconnect. And that's an increasingly hot topic that we're talking about. So again, further research that was done by a think tank in the UK linked working from home during COVID-19 with an epidemic of hidden overtime, which has obviously had this negative impact on people's mental health. And there's been a disproportionate effect on women as well, according to this study by Autonomy as well. Now, Autonomy, which is the think tank involved, have actually proposed amendments to the Employment Rights Act. And their idea is to prevent employers from requiring employees to monitor or respond to any work-related communications or carry any work outside of their working hours. So that's the kind of theme that they're aiming for. And when you think about the methods of communication now as well, I mean, it used to be back in the day, it was a telephone on your desk, wasn't it? And then email came along and everybody could be emailed. And then all of a sudden you could get emails on a mobile telephone. So the mobile phone came along, you were able to be contacted away from your desk. The emails went onto the mobile phone. And, you know, it's evolved even more now. We've got WhatsApp. So I know companies that use WhatsApp, their employees communicate through that. And then you've got all things like Yammer, Slack, all of these instant messaging applications as well, which are also portable. So I think the amount of information that can be shared by employers is fantastic. I mean, it's so useful in many respects, but equally the reverse of that is employees being bombarded with information or feeling like they are obligated to look at stuff, to check in on WhatsApp, check in on the emails at maybe 8 o'clock at night. And I think what muddies the water as well is where you've got people who are working flexibly because it absolutely suits them to do that. And, you know, I love the fact that if I want to take 4 hours out of the day because I need to do something with the children, I can get online later and do the work that I need to do when I choose to do it. Of course, my colleagues might not be working that way and they don't want to be seeing emails from me at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And sometimes I don't want to be receiving emails at that time either. So there's an impact of all of that. And what Autonomy are proposing, and it's not just them, there's a growing body of support for this, is saying, look, we want this ban on employees being contacted outside of certain core hours. And significantly, workers who are subject to a detriment of some kind for failing or refusing to work outside of those core hours can bring a claim to the Employment Tribunal. Now, there would be exemptions for this for certain industries where it's just not feasible to have those requirements complied with. You know, things like employees in the care sector, for example, would probably have to opt out to it. But it's, you know, it's something that's been talked about. Interestingly, if we look across the channel to what's happening in France, Spain, Belgium, Italy, they all have, to varying degrees, some degree of protection or obligation around the right to disconnect. I think in Belgium, it's probably at the lower end of the scale where there's just an obligation to, for a business to think about it, show that they've considered it, perhaps to enter into some sort of dialogue with their employees to gauge what their employees would like to do, right through to some of the other countries that have an absolute ban now on it. I think Portugal is one of the more stricter jurisdictions in that respect. I think I read fines of €4,000 if employees are being contacted. So that is something that could feasibly be brought in, especially when there's such a focus on disconnecting from work and mental health as well. I was actually looking on LinkedIn this morning, and surreptitiously in my feed up popped a campaign from Volkswagen vans. I don't know why Volkswagen vans are appearing in my feed, but there you go. But they've got a campaign at the moment, which I thought, well, that's great. Really ties in with what I'm talking about this morning. And that's all about downing tools. So they say there's no shame in giving work a rest when the day's done. And they're partnering with Mental Health UK on this big initiative to really say to people, look, there's no shame or harm. There shouldn't be any stigma attached to when the working day is finished, you close your laptop, you put the shop shutter down and you walk away. And of course, you know, that's not going to be feasible or practical to do every single day of your working life. But if that can be the kind of main theme, if you've got control over when you want to do that extra work, then I think that's a much better position to be in, really.
Yeah, I think there's another thing as well that I always find quite interesting is I know it's a cost, and you know, I'm hesitant to throw this out there, but you know, we for one, we have work phones and we have personal phones, and I'm quite strict when I go on holiday, for example, with the family, that I don't take my work phone with me. And I think that's really important. So if as a business you've got employees with their work emails on their personal phones, I think that makes it extraordinarily difficult to kind of set the boundaries and set the right culture. And again, I know it's a cost, and I know that providing mobile phones to all of your staff may not be something that every business can do. But if you can, then I think it's quite important to have that separation. I mean, that's aside from the fact that it's probably not a great plan to have confidential information on somebody's personal device anyway. That's a whole different topic. But it's certainly something that can help so that you can start to establish that culture of switch off. Turn it off for the weekends. Weekends are for you. Because I think in that sense, that's certainly something you can do. But I mean, there are other takeaways that we can have from all of this. There's no one size fits all. Hybrid working can mean such a vast array of things. And I'm sure that if we did a straw poll amongst all of you here, some of you might say, well, we've set a number of days in the office, we've set some from home, we allow employees to do it as and when they choose. If they want to come and work in the office, they can. So I think the idea is making sure that you're open, you know, you've got your eyes open, you've got your ears open, you're listening to the staff, your managers are doing the same. So their agenda for their one-to-ones is not just about are they meeting their deadlines, are they achieving their targets, but it's more about making sure that the welfare of the employees is also something that's a topic for discussion in those meetings. A regular reminder, I don't know how regular it might be, but maybe the start of each calendar year even, saying, don't forget to take your annual leave. If somebody looks like they're approaching the end of the holiday year and they've got sort of 10 days outstanding, it's like, well, why haven't you taken your holiday? Don't forget that this is really, really important for you to take. Think about your junior staff. Make sure that the managers are being really clear with them. Ask for help. This might be, you know, this person might be your mentor. You might give them a buddy so that they can talk to. It's about looking at your business and developing an approach that works for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, linking back to what the study found that I was talking about before, those focused hours, those 2-hour blocks of intense time, they were really beneficial to senior employees who might be working on the more complex tasks. But the study found that it actually really decreased the well-being for junior employees who wanted those social interactions rather than just working in isolation from their teams as well. So, you know, echoing what you said, Adrian, that there's no one size fits all approach that you should be taking. I think flexibility, obviously with hybrid working, we're talking about flexibility and all the wonderful benefits that it does bring. But I think flexibility in your own approach to hybrid working as well is also the way to go about approaching this. Before we wrap up, I think we've got a quick question. Elizabeth, thanks for your feedback, Elizabeth. It's good to welcome you back to these webinars as well. So thank you for joining us. And what do you suggest for lawyers who are expected to be responded to at all times?
I think that goes not just for lawyers, but senior staff. Absolutely. I mean, look, I don't know how you would answer that, but I can very often want to use a number of things you can use, like a triage system. So a quick response going, thanks very much for seeing your email. You know, I'll be in touch tomorrow, or I will be in touch within, you know, next couple of days or something like that. So they know that the person who has got it off their desk because they've bounced it to somebody else knows then that it's somebody else's problem, but it's been seen, I think can be really helpful. Or it's just a question of having a conversation at some point with the person and just say, listen, you know, this is the situation. I will absolutely get to it. You know, but if you send me an email at 10 o'clock at night, then it's unlikely that I'm going to respond because I might be asleep or watching crap telly in my case.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We've had another question as well, just before we wrap up, which is somebody saying that they work for a global company and they find it quite difficult to manage the time zones as well. I think, yeah, that's a really tricky issue, especially, I mean, I know as well, I've got clients that are based, headquartered in New Zealand and Australia, and coordinating calls in those time zones can be really difficult. I mean, again, I think it's sort of expectation management, and there's just a discussion there, because I think it's reasonable that if you're expected to be on a call at 9-10 o'clock at night, that you're not then forced to be working 8-9 a.m. the following morning or 8-9 a.m.
the same day. Work, yeah.
You know, the same day. I think the day just shifts, and whether that kind of feeds into maybe some type of flexi time approach or something where you're given that time back. I mean, unfortunately, there are just some roles which require an element of flexibility, but I think that flexibility has to work on both sides of the relationship. Flexibility in terms of the expectations on the employee and when you're available, but the kind of quid pro quo for that is there's flexibility from the business in terms of when you can take that time back and when you get your adequate rest, so you're engaged and efficient and functioning and not getting stressed out.
And a conversation with your manager to say, hang on, I can't possibly do a call at 7 o'clock in the morning, work all day to meet, you know, the overlapping time zones or whatever it is, and then take a call at 10 o'clock at night. So I'm going to manage my diary with your support, Mr. Manager, and other people in the business. If I've got a call at 7 a.m., then I'm not going to be accepting a call at 10 p.m. I will decline it. And, you know, I'm happy to explain why, but, you know, that's not realistic and it's not sustainable.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we'll wrap up there. Just before we go, I want to say we obviously put the webinar onto our website, so please have a look. If you follow me on LinkedIn, I'll stick up some links to the survey study, rather, that I've been referring to in this webinar. And I'll also put a link up to the Health and Safety Executive site where there's a really good risk assessment and some points to consider that you can look at as well. So feel free to follow or connect with me on LinkedIn if you want access to those resources. As I mentioned, we're going to be running these sessions through into the new year. We love the feedback on them, and we are open to suggestions from you on what you want to hear. So obviously we've got some really good ideas about what we're going to be covering over the coming weeks, but if there's anything in particular that's burning a hole for you, let us know and we'll do our best to cover that as well. Otherwise, I think there's nothing left to say but goodbye and have a good Thursday afternoon. Cheerio.
Bye.